Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Believe in Florida Gators podcast. I'm your host, Zach Goodall. You can find me on Twitter at Zach_Goodall. I am joined by, as announced last week, my new co-host, Brandon Carroll, who you can find at It's B. Carroll. We're here to break down what happened last week up in Knoxville between Florida and Tennessee, what's been happening this week, and what's certainly been a hectic news cycle regarding Hurricane Ian. Obviously, our thoughts and prayers out to everyone affected, and we'll certainly go into what's happened there and how it's affected the Gators as they prep for what will be our final topic of the day, the Eastern Washington game against the Eagles, now scheduled for this Sunday at noon in the Swamp. Brandon, thank you for joining me again. Definitely have a lot to cover this episode, but just go ahead and say what's up to the people. Let them know what's been up this past week.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be back. Obviously, my second week as the co-host here. Excited to be back talking about some Florida football and kind of how that's affected this week, like you said, as the game's been moved from Saturday to Sunday. But yeah, I've just kind of been, you know, it hasn't been ideal circumstances, to put it lightly, you know, with the hurricane and everything. Traveled back to Jacksonville to spend it with my mom and girlfriend, kind of staying hunkered down, trying to stay safe. Luckily, we didn't get really any of the bad effects that it's caused elsewhere, some winds and light rain that, you know, kind of were consistent throughout yesterday and some of this morning. It's kind of died down to just being cloudy as of right now, but prayers to everyone that's been affected by the hurricane. You know, hopefully that if you have, you know, were able to kind of come out on top, but if not, prayers for a build back even stronger than were before. But yeah.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the footage coming out of the Fort Myers area and south of that down where the hurricane ultimately made landfall, and then even up into the Orlando Lakeland area and some areas that were affected there, it's pretty brutal. And it just kind of points to how big of a storm that was for there to be such significant flooding that far inland as well. Certainly something that we're going to cover here pretty in depth as it pertains to the Gators once we get into this thing. But first, a word from our sponsors over at BetOnline. They're the fastest and easiest way to wager on all of your favorite sports, contests, and events with first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all of your sports information, from live in-game betting to props and even futures. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to join and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE50, that's BLEAV50, no space, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Please gamble responsibly. All right, Brandon, let's look back before we dive into the Hurricane Ian aspects of the Eastern Washington game on what was a thriller up there in Knoxville between Florida and Tennessee, where the Volunteers ended up walking out, winning 38-33. But, you know, we saw the team struggle in areas that we've seen them struggle throughout the year, particularly on defense. But I think we can walk away from that game, truthfully, understanding that Tennessee was a double-digit favorite and Florida covered, with a lot of positives, with a lot of areas where people should be encouraged, at least compared to the weeks prior. And I think it ultimately starts with Anthony Richardson, if that's something you want to dive right in on.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, to this point this season, we haven't really seen Anthony Richardson kind of be the passer that people expected him to be. Obviously, he has incredible arm talent. He's someone that's able to make throws from anywhere. But he kind of struggled with inconsistency, accuracy issues, things like that. And we saw in this game him kind of take that next step as a quarterback prospect, as a the head guy for Florida, throwing for 453 yards and two touchdowns in that game, and then adding two on the ground as well. So they kind of let him open back up the offense as they kind of restricted him against the likes of Kentucky and USF in weeks prior. So we kind of saw him reassume this kind of role of being the guy in that offense. And as a result, it took off to be one of the, best passing performances from a Florida quarterback against an SEC opponent of all time. So it's just one of these things where you look at kind of everything that he was able to do, and it should provide promise for not just, going forward in the next few games, but for down the stretch as Florida looks to continue building the, program back to its status of prominence that it once kind of realized back in the, late 2000s era, I should say.
Yeah, and I think, not only did it point to Anthony's potential that he does still have as a passer. People were starting to, I mean, Mel Kiper, I believe, or was it Todd McShay? It's so hard to remember who's who because their analysis can both be all over the place. But one of them said that Anthony's one of his biggest fallers at quarterback as a prospect after this game. It doesn't make much sense to me because I think this proved what people were starting to doubt the past 2 weeks. The potential is there for him as a passer. Again, with that big arm, the ability to use his legs to benefit him as a passer. Against Utah, even though it wasn't a stellar line, we've said this a couple times, he was still making the right reads. He was going through progressions, showed some clutch ability on crucial downs and the ability to move the offense down the field. This time, we saw it truly kind of unlock what this offense might look like in the future when those reinforcements we talked about last week, the reinforcements via recruiting, what it could look like when they get here. I mean, going, what was it again? I believe 5 of 6 on fourth downs, the multiple tries for going for two, and the 2 fourth down tries on the first drive. People were starting to complain about it, and I know it sounds cliche because it's a Twitter thing when people say, don't say don't, scared money don't make money if you don't believe it or whatever. But I think we ultimately started to see exactly what that means as it pertains to Billy Napier leading the Gators in this past game. And it still obviously wasn't perfect. They came out with a 5-point loss in a game that, traditionally speaking, Florida doesn't lose, but it just kind of all points back to that overarching idea that the team is not where it needs to be from a talent perspective. But when it gets going, we're starting to realize exactly what it can be in the future, which is it's certainly interesting to me. Yeah, I think that all of the observations at this point, now that they're very far on the outside looking in for the SEC East, need to be long term instead of short term.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, one you mentioned the one thing I want to touch on is kind of the people that were kind of critical of the, two fourth down calls on the first drive and the 2-point conversions and kind of Billy letting himself kind of be aggressive and scare money don't make money, but you're also going to lose money on occasion. That's just something that's going to happen if you're kind of playing to that analytic driven kind of trying to be the aggressor in that situation, which it worked well for Florida on many instances against Kentucky or against Tennessee. And it's why they were put in a situation to be able to win it at the end of the game. I think that's a big thing that you kind of look at for Florida. And if they don't go for those 6 fourth downs, they're not in a position to be able to score as many points as they did. Tennessee's probably getting the ball back with even, more. The clock's not churning. Tennessee's getting the ball back, being able to have more opportunities to score. So Florida did what they needed to do, just in a different way than many people expected them to go in and get it done against the Volunteers. Obviously, they came up short, but there should be a lot that's taken away from what Florida was able to do. The running game was the aspect that we went in thinking that's going to be what they try to harp on. They're going to try to run the ball. Obviously, that wasn't working, so they had to look to Anthony Richardson, and he was able to do what he had to do to keep Florida in that contest. They were able to kind of come back late using that aggressive mindset, and Billy Napier was able to really, you know, see some fight from his team, which he's mentioned at multiple points this week, saying that, you know, there was adversity and we were able to overcome that. And that's one thing that in this program we're trying to build toward, because a lot of times you'll see a team go down on the road against a top 15 opponent and they'll roll over. Florida didn't do that. Florida continued fighting, and they had an opportunity late to be able to win it. And if it wasn't for Anthony Richardson getting hit from behind on that Hail Mary attempt, who knows what could have happened, especially with the history of how Florida and Tennessee has gone. That would not have been surprising to see Florida be able to find a way to get that Hail Mary into the end zone. So just little things like that is just kind of promising for the future of Florida and kind of the next 2-3 years, as you said, when they start getting that talent, those reinforcements into the program.
Yeah, and if we are going to look at things short term in terms of, you know, issues that did occur in the game, obviously does end up being defensively. You know, you mentioned that, you know, Richardson throwing for 453 yards against an SEC opponent is almost historic. Hendon Hooker may not have put up that type of production, but you're talking about an efficiency and a clutch performance to elevate your team to a win. I would argue that that was one of the better games I've seen from an SEC quarterback as well, going 22 of 28, 349, two touchdowns. I mean, almost an 80% completion rating. And then a guy that we know is athletic, but not necessarily know him as a dynamic rusher, also leads Tennessee with 112 yards on 13 carries and a score on the ground. It was similar to the issues we saw against USF in terms of rushing defense, and especially to a quarterback. And then for the first time all year, we saw the secondary start to get a bit exposed. Brandon, you can share a little bit of your analysis here, but otherwise I do want to mention that this will kind of segue us into what will be our third topic today after we talk about the hurricane, and that is changes to Florida's depth chart and some adjustments we expect to see them making. But if there's anything you want to touch on at that part, feel free to go ahead.
No, one thing, you know, it's not necessarily about Florida. It's just kind of a take that I have. After watching Hendon Hooker against Florida, obviously he's had a few tune-up games. He had the game against Pitt to kind of get him into this contest, but he went out and he put up a very, very good performance against a Florida team that many people might not have expected to contend with Tennessee, or if they did, it was going to be, you know, along that 11-point spread. However, Florida did do that, and he produced a Heisman-like performance against Florida. I don't think many people can really argue that. Obviously, he put up near 500 yards, if not over. I can't do the math in my head right now, and that's not going to happen. I'm just not good at math. I'm sorry, everyone. No, near good. 500 you're yards. He was one of the, you know, he was the guy for Tennessee to be able to knock off Florida for the second time in, you know, the last 18 matchups. So he's had that, you know, kind of billing of this guy is very good. He came into the contest, you know, with a 37-3 touchdown interception ratio, and he proved that he can take care of the ball, but he can also be Superman when you need him to. And he proved just that on Saturday. So I would be shocked if he's not at least in the conversation going forward for Heisman contention if he keeps this kind of, you know, play up, which I wouldn't be surprised if he does, because Tennessee's offense is one of the best in the nation, and it's not going away anytime soon.
Yeah, and it was without Cedric Tillman, too. I mean, Imagine when he gets his number one playmaker back as well and what they'll be able to do. I mean, you got to view them as a, you know, we obviously see Georgia as the runaway here, but if it's the next best team, and that's usually Florida, I know it's tight between Tennessee and Kentucky, but I like Tennessee.
I'm taking Tennessee.
We can move into the hurricane aspect of this. I believe right now, it is just exiting, and we're recording this on Thursday night, I believe just kind of exiting that south of Jacksonville area, getting over to the ocean, expected to, if not already, strengthen into a Category 1 again before going up to the Carolinas. Brandon, obviously, as he said, is over in that area. I've got family from there, so we're definitely wishing the best, as we saw St. Augustine, a place that we know pretty well, flooding pretty badly downtown. I know that's kind of normal for events like this, but still, you know, it kind of hits close to home. And obviously, again, you know, down to the Fort Myers, Naples, southwest region of Florida. It's brutal to see this, especially, you know, every so often in different areas of the state. And we know that there's still a lot of damage left to be, you know, done away with to see what the human damage is of this. And it's just, we're sending our thoughts out to everyone. I know the program is as well. And with that, we can kind of dive into what this looks like for the team. They ended up sheltering on Wednesday night after moving their practice up an hour, just to let everyone kind of get in place and make sure they have their resources allocated. They had been checking with the team throughout the week, and I believe 15 or 16 at the last time they checked were kind of in that path of, there could be some serious damage here. We need to help them out. And we saw that thing track through Southwest Florida into the Lakeland, into the Orlando area before getting up to that Daytona, St. Augustine region. So it really was statewide. And now the Gators are kind of in that assessment mode. They had Thursday off. They're kind of seeing what the damage is. And the first thing they're going to do is try and help the families of the players involved here. And I think that really is a great use of their time. I know Napier said that they view it as advantageous in the sense that they can recover, also focus a little bit on future game planning, but they're certainly being proactive when it comes to helping these families involved. And I'd imagine that it's going to extend into the community as well. Fortunately, Alachua County really wasn't bothered too much by the hurricane as much as it was originally projected to, but I'm sure they'll be doing stuff across the state to pitch in as much as they can.
Absolutely. And I think that just goes back to kind of Napier's overall scope of how to run a program. Obviously football is what he's there for, but if without the people aspect, it's you can't build a program. So just having him kind of at least back up his words, back up what he said to this point by going out and helping those that are affected and kind of trying to build back a lot of what it could have been lost through this natural disaster. So I think just kind of having that is a testament to how where this program is going, both from a standpoint of where what he's building, as well as kind of the testament to the guy in charge at the University of Florida and his genuine care for the players and the families and the just really everyone that surrounds the Florida, Gainesville area, as well as just anywhere in Florida. So I think that's a big thing that they're doing there.
Yeah, and certainly, and it did shift their schedule to where their Thursday, Friday, Saturday operations are now Friday, Saturday, Sunday operations. They did not gather on Thursday to practice or do anything, but they do get to, conduct walkthroughs and can, kind of work as though they were on a normal game week schedule, as if the game were on Saturday from this point on. Really won't lose too much. They got to practice inside the indoor facility there, so. Hurricane aside, I think that they should be pretty much on track as if it were a normal game week going into this Eastern Washington game.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think this week is really going to be affected too much. It's just the kind of the day off that's going to kind of be weird for some of the players and coaches in terms of how they normally go about things. But next week should definitely be interesting in terms of, are they going to get Monday off? How are they going to get back into the building? How are things kind of going to roll with homecoming against Missouri approaching pretty quickly as they have a game on Sunday? So just kind of feeling that out, seeing how that kind of all unfolds next week as Napier and co try to hurry the week with, that game being sooner than usual. So I think that'll really be the thing to watch regarding their preparation from the effects of Hurricane Ian.
Yeah, and when it comes to the football side of it, this is kind of where we can dive back into that third segment. Is they we've seen a couple of depth chart changes in the past couple of weeks, whether it was due to injury or not. I believe the first substantial one that wasn't due to injury was Desmond Watson taking over as the starting nose tackle for Jalen Lee. And of course, there was Scooby Williams and Shamar James and their involvement at middle linebacker as Ventrell Miller was injured. We had three on Wednesday night when they released the injury report. Really, by the first release, it was four because D1 Black wasn't in his normal spot as the third team linebacker, but there was a correction issued about an hour later to put him back in there. But still three on the defensive side of the ball. So whether it's due to injury or not, I believe they are, identifying the issues through four games, through especially the big road test against Tennessee, and trying to mend them. And obviously, we've yet to see what it's going to look like on the field. And we don't know if this is necessarily going to be the long-term approach once they have their guys in, if they want to give them more chances. But before we dive into the moves themselves, Brandon, I'm not sure how you feel about it necessarily. I get the feeling fans find it extremely refreshing, and I tend to agree with them. I think in a year like this, where you already have your two losses and again are on the outside looking in, to put it nicely, for the SEC East, it's best to start experimenting with the pieces that could be the future of the team rather than ones necessarily that are nearing the end of their time as a Gator and just aren't contributing to the level they should be, considering that they're at that point in their careers.
Yeah, it's a U Future takeover, as they like to coin with their hashtag on Twitter and any social media. But obviously, you're getting kind of the young guys in here. I'm just gonna go out and say it. Trey Dean's the biggest one. Obviously, he's listed with a lower body injury this week, so you see a former borderline five star and safety stepping in, and Kamari Wilson to fill his spot, which is for many people a breath of fresh air. Like you said, Wilson was one of he was the guy in the last transition class for Florida, and now he's getting an opportunity to be a contributor immediately, and that can only help Florida's defense after some blunders from his predecessor last week and throughout this season, both in the run game and as a coverage man. So I think just having that kind of refreshing outlook on this in the secondary, as well as you're getting Justice Boone in for Princely Umiamialen, who has been kind of the guy that Napier's they've both been in the conversation for guys that have impressed this new staff, but just trying to throw some different things in there, get some different looks, and trying to kind of see what works in the grand scheme of things. Boone is someone that, he's been a really flashy as a pass rusher this season. Maybe they're trying to get after the passer a bit more against Eastern Washington. Just trying to see if that can, him getting more reps can, kind of help them in that area. Princely, who was supposed to be kind of that big pass rusher for Florida off the other edge of Brenton Cox, has been more of a run defender. So you kind of have guys that are going to just rotate in for different situations and things like that for just this season in general, but especially going forward, as like Zach said, some of the veterans aren't contributing at a rate that many people believe that they should, especially the staff. So you're going to get these new guys in to build them, not just for the rest of this season, but going into the years in, next season after, and building toward what Napier and Co. hope is a return to their level of excellence at the University of Florida.
Yeah, and another two along to go with Wilson at safety. One is Donovan McMillan, the sophomore, more of a big-bodied safety that was, in hindsight, one of the better-looking evaluations of the Mullen campaign coming out of Pennsylvania, not a place where Florida tended to get much talent, although the hit rate was high because Kyle Pitts, also out of Pennsylvania. He's listed as the co-first teamer with Kamari there, and he's expected to contribute as well. The strengths of their game are almost, even though they're different types of athletes, kind of similar. I think we both project them to be pretty strong playing downhill, which is, as you mentioned, Dean kind of struggled in the run game sometimes. He was a hard hitter, but oftentimes wasn't necessarily in the gap he needed to be in or pursuing correctly. And I think Wilson and McMillan can both offer an upgrade there. What I want to see is how they're affected in coverage. Neither have been tested very much. I think Kamari has been tested one time, gave up a catch for 6 yards. McMillan's had like one defensive snap all year, so it hasn't happened. But I'm very curious to see how they match up. McMillan being a guy that's, I think, 6'2", 200, would love to see him going up against tight ends. And you could really say the same thing for Wilson, or maybe even having a matchup against running backs out of the backfield, because he's a very great athlete. There's another one that Billy Napier mentioned by name, true freshman Miguel Mitchell, is a player that we might end up wanting to watch at safety as they look to fill in Dean snaps. Again, it aligns with the idea that they want to try the young guys. He was a player that Napier evaluated, Patrick Toney evaluated, and ended up getting to commit and sign with Florida over Tennessee at the end of this past cycle. There was another move as well, and it's not so much aligning with the younger guys, but Jaden Hill. Last time he played for Florida was December 31st, 2020, the Cotton Bowl against Oklahoma. He tore his ACL the following August in fall camp. He had I guess, some sort of second injury or a setback this past summer after he participated in spring camp, and missed the first 4 games of the season and all of fall camp as a result. He's back. We've seen him warming up with the team for the past two games, but not take the field for a snap. And now the redshirt sophomore is listed officially as the starter opposite of Jason Marshall. Again, he's a redshirt sophomore, so even though he's been with the team for, this is his fourth season, he technically could have another two seasons. So he could be kind of a mid to long-term player here if he bounces back, as Billy Napier projects he will. He said he was one of the standout players to him back in spring camp when he was on the field. So, Brandon, I know that you've evaluated Mitchell quite a bit. If you want to expand on what you think his usage could be, as well as McMillan, and then, you know, your thoughts on Jaden Hill as well. I mean, I think his story is phenomenal, and most fans know this, but if not, you know, these weren't the only two knee injuries he's had. He tore his opposite ACL from the knee he recently tore it in back, I think it was his senior year. It was either senior or junior year of high school. So you talk about someone that's just been through it and consistently fought back. I think that's really a perfect example of what Billy Napier wants from this football team. And that's why, in addition to his skill set, Napier really seems to love the guy.
Yeah, without a doubt. I'm going to start with McMillan here and kind of work my way from the top to, you know, further down in the secondary. But McMillan is someone that, even though he hasn't seen many snaps defensively this season, I feel like his name has been called many, many times when it comes to special teams. He's known for being kind of a rangy safety back in high school when he was playing, you know, in Pennsylvania. And he's carried that to Florida. He's someone that can cover punts, cover kicks, and he just makes plays on the ball. He gets downhill fast, is able to kind of pack a punch when he is, you know, making tackles and things like that. He is the special teams ace of this sort of unit. And so if when he gets on the field as a safety in replacement of Dean and rotation of Kamari Wilson, you'll kind of see a lot of what he does working downhill. And I think he'll be someone that can be rangy as a coverage man. I think that, you know, he's kind of an instinctual ball player. He's going to go out there. He's not going to, you know, line up man to man, but he can make some plays in zone that can really help Florida in their ability to kind of make sure that no one gets behind him, as they did, as Tennessee did, especially Brew McCoy last week. So I think just kind of having McMillan back there will be a welcome sight for Florida, as well as, you know, Florida fans. And I know, you know, there's probably a lot from McMillan that's kind of hoping that, you know, he can make the most of this opportunity, especially having only played one defensive snap this season. And then you look at a guy like Miguel Mitchell. Mitchell is, you know, you look at McMillan and you're saying, oh, this is a pretty well-built guy. He's someone that can be a bigger safety for Florida. And then you look at Miguel Mitchell and you say, oh, this guy's even bigger. And he can be even more, you know, more downhill focused and kind of make these plays downhill against the run. And I think as a result, you'll see him kind of bounce between that star position as well as that safety position for Florida, back and forth in rotation with not just Kamari Wilson and McMillan, but also Trevez Johnson and Jadarius Perkins. So he'll kind of be, you know, someone that they kind of use as a Swiss Army knife in that secondary rotation, which is exactly what they told him they were going to do when they were recruiting him. So if he's able to kind of assume himself and kind of find his way within this Florida defense in one of those spots, Florida could be in a great position going forward, as they have someone that can not just play the vital star position, but that he can be a rotational guy at safety if they need, if need be. And then Jaden Hill, obviously, like Zach said, is someone that is, his story is, if he's able to come full circle and continue performing at a level he was when he, before he went out with this gruesome knee injury, that would be best case scenario for Florida, because that just strengthens that secondary even more, especially the cornerback room, which is, you know, something that Corey Raymond's trying to rebuild as one of the best in college football. Obviously, he has Jason Marshall Jr. on the opposite side, who's going to be able to take away some, you know, that part of the field, because he's clearly the cornerback one in this group. But if Hill, and then you also look at Avery Helm and Devin Moore on that other side, as well as Jalen Kimber, you have a rotation, a bevy of guys that are able to perform at a really, really high level for Florida, which gives them so much leniency to be able to just throw guys out there and make, you know, all of them having the ability to make plays both against the run as well as in coverage. So Florida secondary with this movement of youth and, you know, also bringing guys back should be, you know, vastly different from what we saw against Tennessee in the coming weeks.
Certainly. I'm certainly excited to see it as well. You talk about the cornerback room, and I agree. I think it honestly, with Hill back, if he's able to play at full strength, it might be the most stacked position on the team. And we're starting to see those kind of slowly emerge, because back in fall camp, we really couldn't have answered what that was besides maybe the running back room. And we still needed to see more from a true freshman who's coming in and playing in Trevor Etienne. You still wanted to see him produce on the field before you truly say that. And now you're talking about a legitimate five deep cornerback room. That is pretty impressive. That's exactly where they would like to be. And hopefully Hill can provide that. And also hopefully, you know, can get his career back on track, because he certainly is a really talented defensive back. I think he could be a potential NFL guy if he's able to come back and play for a while and prove that the injuries are behind him, because he can play at a high level. We've seen it before. Brandon, I don't know if you've got any other positions where against a team, you know, like Eastern Washington, and I guess we can't take it lightly because we saw what happened with USF, and we personally, you know, took that kind of lightly. But assuming this game goes the way it should, in addition to these moves that we've seen on the depth chart, is there anything else you'd like to kind of see them experiment with? Like, I can think of two. I'll leave one for after you go. But the first one I immediately think of is defensive end Chris McClellan. I think he's had very limited opportunities, but had, I believe, the most of his four-game career thus far against Tennessee. I think it was around 18 snaps. I'm stalling because I'm typing his name into Pro Football Focus to check it out. Yes, career high, 18 snaps. And 2 weeks in a row, he's been one of Florida's highest graded run defenders. And obviously, that's not an easy task for a freshman defensive lineman in the SEC. He's created one pressure that came in the Tennessee games. We've seen bursts of him contributing in multiple ways. We talk about a position that needs players to, you know, emerge as good depth rotational pieces and stack the room. I think Chris McClellan, you know, in a rotation with Jervon Dexter, or if he's moving to the other end, or they're doing different packages where they change the defensive lineman alignments, he's a guy that should be pretty versatile at his size, could shift inside and out at 6'3", 305, and clearly looks like he can disrupt the game in, you know, against the run and the pass. So he's one player in particular that in a game, I hate to say in a game like this, but in this game and potentially moving forward, if he can handle his responsibilities in this game, I'd like to see his role grow. I think he could be another one of those young freshmen who has carved a role on this team, a significant one out, because they certainly need that.
Without a doubt. And I don't think it's too much to say that Florida's looked its best as a run defense when he's been on the field. I feel like we've seen multiple times over the past few weeks when he's getting snaps, Florida's run defense is stout, especially in the middle, because he's kind of playing, you know, obviously he's a defensive end, but he's still playing closer to, you know, that three tech that we were expecting from, you know, Gervon Dexter before he said that he was going to move out to defensive end. McClellan is a kind of, you know, he's able to be that versatile piece. As you said, he can play inside, he can play outside. So if having that guy in the middle to really anchor down a spot next to Desmond Watson, Florida's interior is just massive. I mean, there's not really anywhere, you know, any other word I can say that really encapsulates what that means to have two guys that are not just big, but agile, and they're able to kind of fill these holes with consistency. So if you're having those two guys be the pieces that Florida needs them to be to rush, to, you know, clog these holes in the middle to combat against these rushing attacks that are just gashing Florida week in and week out, then McClellan is a perfect pick for someone that, you know, should see more time, definitely more than the 18 snaps he saw last week. And I think that continues to ramp up as the season goes on, as well as a lot of the other young talent that we'll, you know, we're seeing more and more of each week. And another position, I'm going to flip to the offensive side here real quick, that I'd like to see a bit more from. You know, maybe it's not a rotational aspect, but I think offensively, obviously, you have the wide receivers. They are what they are. There's not really much that you can do until they get those reinforcements in next season. They have a very good wide receiver class coming in. But for now, I think that you clearly have the top three in Ricky Pearsall, Justin Shorter, and Xavier Henderson. I think those are the clear guys at the top. And then you look at the running back room. Montrell Johnson and Naquan Wright and Trevor Etienne have been very solid. Obviously, last week they took a dip, but they've all been, you know, had their moments this season. I think the biggest thing for me in that skill position room is the tight end group. You know, we've seen a lot of Dante Zanders and Keon Zipperer, but we haven't really seen much outside of those guys. I know Nick Elksness last, you know, offseason was someone that was earning acclaim for what he was able to do in you know, spring practice and going into fall camp. He was kind of being that piece that people thought, you know, Kyle Pitts is gone now. We can have this guy come in and be a pass catcher. Obviously not along the same lines of Kyle Pitts, who's an anomaly within every tight end, you know, coming out of college outside of maybe Brock Bowers, who's putting up ridiculous numbers for Georgia right now. But you're just seeing these guys, you know, in this tight end group that could be better than it is right now, not getting snaps on the field. So I think a guy like Nick Elksness could get in there and make some plays. I've been a huge believer of Arliss Boardingham, who's now back from his shoulder injury this offseason. So you're just kind of having these guys, you know, be pieces that, you know, haven't really made impacts to this point, but can go forward and make impact if they are able to see the field. So, you know, you can find guys at this tight end group kind of build on what Keon Zipperer was able to do last week, at least in the passing game, and me be these safety valves for Anthony Richardson to find when he gets in trouble, and be those consistent pieces for him to continue building off of impressive performance last week.
That was going to be my other one, was the tight end room. And I was going to say the same guys you were, because yeah, Keon Zipperer had, you know, really the play of his life, and it turned into the game of his life, I think, during his time with Florida this past week. And it was good to see. And we've seen Florida toy with 12 personnel a little bit, but they definitely aren't running it to what we expected them to at this point in the year.
It's even like,
from what I could tell.
Yeah. And it's even like they haven't even done it to a point of what they said they were going to do it. Like, it wasn't like our expectations were built off what they were saying. Like, okay, this is going to be our base offense. They haven't shown that this year.
Right. And I think it speaks to the room needing, you know, reinforcements and development. And in fairness to Elksness, he, as well as Jonathan Odom, missed a lot of the spring due to injuries to their shoulders to various degrees. But I really expected both of them to contribute this year in different ways. Elksness, again, is the field stretcher, and he saw, I think, 4 snaps against Tennessee, was mainly used as a pass protector. I'd like to see him used as a receiver, because, that was supposed to kind of be the strength of his game. And maybe this is a game where you can kind of toy with that. Odom, meanwhile, is someone that you kind of, you know, he's got the bloodlines from, you know, his dad to be a blocker for the University of Florida. And that's kind of how he was always viewed, as a prospect, as a blocking type of tight end. So, you know, even though Zanders has been able to contribute in some ways and was kind of the story of the offseason, we're not seeing a ton of production there. And again, we know what this offense wants to look like in terms of tight end usage. So again, it just feels like one of those times where you can kind of experiment with certain positions. And I agree with you. I think that's certainly one that we would like to see them toy with a little bit. We, I believe, are, you know, kind of running long on time here. I haven't been able to check the clock, but I think we've only got one thing left. Florida versus Eastern Washington. Unique game being on a Sunday. Certainly a unique environment right after following a hurricane and testing where each team is, you know, mentally. I'm trying to pull the lineup here, Brandon, but we don't necessarily need to give a score prediction again, but I'm curious for what you think the result of this game will be, and especially keeping the USF game in mind. You know, we did expect that to be much more of a game leading in Florida's favor, and it truly came down to the wire to only be a 3-point win for the Gators. I can't find the line. I don't think BetOnline has it listed right now because of the postponement, but I would imagine it is a double-digit line. Florida's pretty clearly favored. Do you think that this is the type of game they could cover? Do you think we could see maybe not a repeat, maybe not as drastic as the USF game, but again, a game where they struggle a bit more than we anticipate them to, or do you think this could be a blowout? I don't even know exactly where I think it'll be at this point.
Yeah, honestly, I can see it going both ways. Obviously, I think there's going to be a lot of young talent on the field, so we could see some miscues that may not, you know, be indicative of what this Florida team is. But do we really know what this Florida team is over four games? I feel like they've been a different team all four games. So we really don't understand like what Florida does. It does well at this point, and which is odd considering normally you have an identity in week four. And going into week five, I should say. So Florida's still up and down right now. So I think that the opponent gives them an opportunity to kind of, you know, be productive in a way that allows them to cover. But without knowing the line, without kind of knowing what Florida is right now, I'm not going to kind of go on record and say, oh, Florida's covering. And then they come out with a 45-point line. And I'm like, all right, what was I thinking? So it's just not something I'm comfortable doing right now. But sure. I do think Florida kind of handedly, you know, is able to take care of Eastern Washington on Sunday. And they kind of show flashes from some of the young guys as well as some of the older guys. Anthony Richardson continues to, you know, build off last week's performance, playing loose and, you know, picking up yards on the ground as well as making good decisions over the middle of the field. Doesn't have too many turnover worthy throws or, you know, kind of make decisions that put Florida in a bad spot against Eastern Washington the same way they did against USF. So it's going to be an interesting game in terms of there's, you know, it's a long week. We, you know, postponements have thrown things out of whack a bit. You know, they got off day to, you know, on Thursday, they're rolling into Friday with, you know, kind of what would normally be their Thursday. So it's just kind of all crazy, but I do like Florida to take care of business against Eastern Washington. I don't think we see another Florida looking over, you know, a team that might not be on the same scale of where Florida, you know, is from a talent standpoint, as well as just a team in general, a program. But no disrespect to Eastern Washington either. They're, you know, they have been one of the better teams in the FCS for a while. So
yeah, they certainly have. And I think that Florida's probably learned its lesson when it comes to looking over teams. I remember it pretty specifically that against USF, you know, Napier was pretty consistently saying, you know, tons of respect for how this program operates. They put up a good fight, but we were able to edge it out and win, and we should be proud. Paraphrasing, of course. Whereas Montrell Johnson came out and, you know, again, paraphrasing, was like, nah, we should have won that game by much more. You know, I think it kind of speaks to the team realizing that, hey, that's not what Florida versus USF is supposed to look like, and we need to correct those kind of games moving forward. And with that, I do agree with you. I do think they come out and handle business against Eastern Washington. Again, couldn't find a line with Bet Online nor the Sports Illustrated Sportsbook. So I'm, you know, as a company man, not going to venture outward. Won't say whether or not they will cover either, like you, don't want to look like a dummy. But I do think they come out and win pretty handily. I could see them honestly winning by, like, let's call it 17 points plus at this point. I think Anthony does build off of what was a really good showing this past week, where he does seem more comfortable passing, throwing, allowing both features of that game, of his game, to kind of open up the other. And as a whole, again, we saw it maybe not to the passing, the great extent when it comes to passing, at least against USF, but we saw efficiency. And then, of course, we saw a dynamic showing with his legs. So they can kind of build off of each other. And with that all being said, I think it comes together and really elevates the team as a whole.
Yeah, for sure. And before we kind of wrap up here, I just want to give a little shout out to Montrell Johnson and kind of just, you know, Zach mentions how he kind of said that, you know, this isn't a game that should have been this close. Definitely shouldn't have came down to one of the last plays of the game, but still shouldn't have been a 3-point margin for Florida to be able to pull it out against USF. And then I think just the way that he's able to carry himself throughout this season shows that what, you know, Napier had at Louisiana Lafayette, where Montrell Johnson originally came from, is something worth, you know, kind of remaining around for. Because Johnson is really unlike any other Florida player that we've seen in quite some time. I know when he scored on Saturday to give, you know, kind of put Florida back into the mix. There was a point where, you know, he had guys coming over to celebrate and kind of, you know, hype him up or whatever. And he just kind of pointed back to the sideline and kept running. understanding that this game, like, we are losing, we are not going to celebrate as if, you know, we just tied it or are up. Just kind of seeing his mindset of like being a team player and trying to win as a, you know, on a different level of just performing well individually, but trying to kind of be that, you know, final outcome guy. I was impressed with how that kind of transpired. And I think that can be something that kind of trickles down into other parts of the team. So even though he hasn't been here for a while, even though he didn't perform at a Power Five level, he is performing as a Power Five caliber talent, both on the field as well as how he carries himself from a leadership role.
Dare I say it, Montrell Johnson is he's not the type of guy that would get up and celebrate after tackling someone for a first down. I mean, like, I don't mean to, I sound like an asshole, but I think, again, it's this idea of the culture that Napier's trying to build here, where stuff like that's not happening, yeah, where they're not breaking out a turnover chain like they did during the scrimmage game, where there's an honor to the game and an accountability to faults. Montrell Johnson is a perfect example of that. You know, he's hard on himself when he had that fumble in the first game, and that's all he could think about the rest of the game, even though he played well, all things considered, against Utah. And the loss to USF, and how, even coming from a way different program than Florida, understanding what nearly losing that game meant, you know, I think it's a perfect testament to the type of identity that Napier wants this team to have. I think that he's truly, as a result, a building block, not just from on the field production, but also off the field leadership ability. So I second your toast to him, I guess, in that sense.
I just couldn't let the show go without kind of, you know, bringing that up, especially after you mentioned his take on USF. I think he's someone that understands, like, Florida, you know, what Florida's trying to accomplish moving forward. And he's kind of, you know, someone that embodies that identity that can start moving into different players as Napier gets his pieces into the program. So just kind of having what he's, you know, been able to do, not just against Tennessee when he told his teammates to go back to the sideline because they were down, you know, two scores still, but also having the, you know, the understanding of, oh, we don't, you know, we're not in a dogfight with USF. That's just not how it works. You know, I'm not, you know, fumbling on my first touch of the season. That's not, you know, the standard I hold myself to. So I was just, I've been very impressed with Montrell and kind of the direction that he's kind of trying to lead this Florida direction, you know, Florida team, and I should say, in his early stages, just as a sophomore, which Napier, I'm sure, is just elated about being able to get him back for at least another year, if not two, to really push this unit forward into what he envisions as the University of Florida football program.
Without a doubt. I think we are able to let the show go on that note. With that, thank you guys for tuning in for another episode of the Believe in Florida Gators. Again, make sure to go and check out our sponsors at BetOnline and use the promo code BELIEVE50. Go ahead over there and use it and place your bets. Maybe you'll be able to find a line for this Florida versus Eastern Washington game before I can. I know I have to have it by Sunday morning so I can write a story about it. You guys can check me out on Twitter again for all of my written work, as well as this pod at @Zach_Goodall. And my new co-host, Brandon, at It's B. Carroll. Brandon, thank you for joining me, and we will catch you guys next time.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.